Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing a local podcast. Good morning, good morning. It is Monday, February the 28th, 2022. Blustery, cold. Winter, sort of. I'm not sure. Thanks for having me back. It's been a bit. I think I did this podcast maybe around the Super Bowl. Just haven't really had a lot going on. Just kind of settling into a routine. I've talked about, you know, getting back to meetings. I've been doing this Friday night meeting, finding speakers, you know, making coffee. Taking on a commitment for the exact reason that I knew that it would be important is so that I would actually have to show up. And I do this with a lot of things that are important to me. Running, meetings, maybe just those two things. And I was actually putting a little bit more emphasis on running and less on meetings. And I had to kind of reverse that. So just getting really back into the meeting game. Trying to do, there's a meeting tonight I'll probably go to. It's tough because I'm juggling a lot of stuff. A lot of benefits from being sober, you know, have a relationship with my family, my parents, my father especially, because my mother obviously passed, and you know, he needs me more and more these days. So you know, just if I hadn't gotten sober and I still was behaving and carrying on like the way that I was, I probably either one wouldn't be invited to help take care of my father, or two, just wouldn't have a relationship with them at all. So you know, chalk up another thing to be grateful for to of being sober is that for me, I can be there for my parents. And I know a lot of people are there for their parents and they don't have to be sober or whatever it is, but the life that I was living, I was too much focused on myself. And when I'm too much focused on myself, I don't have time for anybody else. And so you know, I could say honestly that that's sort of the disease that I struggle with is the disease of putting me first. And, you know, I went to a meeting the other day and the topic of surrender came up. And, you know, that's kind of the first thing that I really needed to start doing to become available for other people was surrender. The fact that what I wanted was not most important. And I had to surrender the fact that I was an alcoholic. I had to surrender the fact that I couldn't quit drinking. I had to surrender the fact that I'm a self-centered asshole and I have a deficiency with humility. I had to surrender, give up, wave the white flag, admit all these things. And it wasn't until I did that that I was able to free up some time to give to others. And part of me, you know, I think that some of that is just maturing. You know, you just grow up, right? I'm definitely not as excited or interested in doing partying and hanging out, right, and having fun like I used to be. I'm more excited about being at home with my family, cooking. And luckily that fits in sort of with taking care of my dad, you know. I'd like to say that I'm, you know, just this awesome son and all I want to do is just make time for my father. It's not the case, you know. And my father, you know, doesn't want me to do that. My father does not want to spend all of his time with me, you know, trying to balance, you know, giving my father some freedom, but still knowing that I'm available if he needs me. and putting up with the shit, you know. It's weird, but my 84-year-old father loves to poke at me about all of my past, you know. He called me the other day and asked me if I had something. Do you have my WD-40? I was like, no, I do not, you know. I don't know if other people have this struggle with the relationship with their parents, but I guess, you know, my dad didn't do a lot of work on self like I had to, right? You know, my dad's life has been great. He did quit drinking because he started having some heart problems. And the doctor said, listen, your health is not good, and you, one of the things you need to do is quit drinking. And he did. So that shows you how important alcohol was to him. Not that important, even though he did love to drink wine and do his thing, but in the end, he chose health over alcohol. But you know, I was talking to somebody. I think I shared at a meeting, and you know, one of the first things that really caught my ear in sobriety was the phrase "keeping my side of the street clean." When it was explained to me, you know, as I had gotten a little bit of time, you know, during doing that, the, you know, the 10th step, which is, let me grab. I got a book. Wait a minute. I got it right here. The 10th step. Step 10, where is it, son of a bitch? Here it is. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I love that step, you know. And I think it falls under the same kind of phrase as, you know, keeping my side of the street clean, you know. And it used to be explained to me, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when you're laying in bed or when I'm laying in bed, and I'm not sitting right. You know, it's not feeling right. I don't have a clear conscience. I've clearly not kept my side of the street clean. And early on, especially in the beginning of getting sober, I was like so sensitive. I'm still sensitive, but I would be very, very sensitive because I was such a mess when I came to the program. I had so much real work to do. That the phrase, like, keep my side of the street clean, really made sense to me. And it wouldn't be for a while until I got, you know, some more sobriety under my belt that I started, you know, working on these steps and started to learn more and more about myself. And more that phrase would come into my life. And as a person that's got some time today, you know, that is my life, is keeping my side of the street clean. Early on in sobriety, it was always about the fucking bad shit that I had done, right? You know, I've talked about how, you know, there were some moments in early sobriety where I would say something and it would be pointed out to me how stupid that was, right? You know, or how hurtful it was. Or, you know, I shared that time where a buddy of mine was, you know, after the meeting, he stayed and was just chatting, right? And I don't think I had I wasn't comfortable yet with that. I'm still not really comfortable with that, to hang out at a meeting afterwards and chat with people. I mean, I catch up with a few people that I know, but, you know, I've always been that guy that stands a little bit on the outside, envious of those who could sit in there and just kind of chat. And, you know, but I remember chatting, or he chatted. I went to the car. He came back to the car and was like, you know, hey, and jumped in. I was giving him a ride, and I told him, I go, someone was a chatty Cathy. And he said, you know what? That really hurt my feelings. We'll be right back. So, I mean, moments like that where I was completely humiliated, you know, ego devastation, ultimate humiliation, you know, moments like that would occur, and they stuck with me. And I remember that night laying in bed just feeling like a 1 inch tall, and what it said to me is that I needed to reach out and apologize. You know, I needed to say, listen, I didn't quite understand. I was trying to be funny. You know, how much explanation I needed to give, I wasn't sure. But I know that, like, you know, I would later learn that sarcasm and kind of belittling people was kind of how I used to fit in, how I used to be part of, you know, of a conversation. You know, if I didn't have a lot of great words, I would try to be funny. You know, you hear a lot of that with people. You know, I knew this guy who was, he was pretty much an asshole. And, you know, he would belittle and make fun of people to make himself feel better. And at my age, I used to think that was funny. Oh, you know, it doesn't matter what you say or, you know, how you make fun of me, because I'm an adult. I don't care. And I know most of it's not true. And but eventually that shit starts to wear on you and you're like, what the fuck? And it just really exposes, you know, how some people don't really get it. How some people don't really keep their side of the street clean. But I was that guy. I used to use, you know, comedy or try to be funny and make fun of people. And it was just a bad habit that I'd gotten into. And when someone exposed it like that, it hurt my feelings. It hurt my feelings. It hurt my ego is what it hurt. My pride. Feelings, I'm not sure, is a fair representation of what got hurt. I think it was just my ego and pride. But I remember I took a hard look at it and I said, you know, you need to stop doing that. But that's how it would be for a long time. That was me keeping my side of the street clean. What did I do wrong? You know, and the idea that I could apologize, clean it up, and move on, that idea seemed amazing to me because I was definitely a guy that carried a lot of shit. You know, bad behaviors, guilt, shame, because of the dumb shit that I used to do. And I would be the guy that would never apologize. You know, you need to apologize. I don't want to say sorry. And for some reason, when I read it in this book and, you know, I had a little bit of time of being sober, the idea of cleaning up my side of the street seemed awesome. The ability to apologize. Look, the book says I can do it. Listen, I am sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I apologize. And I'll try to do better. It was awesome. I thought, what a great idea. But for so long, it was all about the bad shit. But what I've learned in this program, at least for me, and what I've learned about me is that, you know, good things can be just as dangerous. They can be just as unsettling. They can clearly kick me off the path of where I'm hoping to be headed to. You know, I remember early on in the program, you know, if you told me that I did a bad job, basically I wanted to fucking jump off a bridge. If you told me that I had done a good job, I wanted to be president of the company. That's how extreme. I mean, that's how bipolar I was or am. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm taking a look at all the things that's gone on. You know, if somebody comes up and says, you know, I do another podcast, Rehoboth Social, you know, one small business helping another. I enjoy, you know, talking to people and having conversations about their business and stuff like that. But if someone comes up to me and says, oh, my God, I listened to that podcast that you did and it was really good. Oh, geez, I'm fucking fucked up for the rest of the day. You know, my shoulders are back now. My chest is out. All of a sudden, I feel like I'm, you know, I've been recognized. And ego starts to come in. All these weird emotions start flowing in. I start pumping myself up higher than I literally should be. And it can be as big of a distraction as if someone says, listen, that was a terrible podcast. All of a sudden, I'm down in the dumps. You know, it's still dangerous. Because ideally for me, I need to be kind of just walking in the middle of the road, right? You know, hopefully not too much good, hopefully not too much bad. Either one can be very dangerous. So, you know, I had to start paying attention to some of the good things that were happening and to remind myself, listen, hey, maybe you had a good podcast. You know, someone should recognize it. You do a lot of work. It doesn't mean that you are now the best podcaster in the entire world, because in my mind, that's what they just said to me. But it just shows, look, you're doing a lot of work, and eventually someone's going to recognize that you're working at it. Doesn't mean you're the best. Doesn't mean you need to be hoisted up on people's shoulders and carried around the room. It just means, look, you've been doing a lot of work, and it's starting to pay off. Good for you. You know, early on, and I think this happens with a lot of folks that get sober. And unfortunately for me, it was, you know, it was drugs and alcohol, and it was just, you know, gluttonous living. And when I finally did get sober and didn't, you know, drive my car drunk down the highway or belittle somebody or get into an argument or badmouth somebody or, you know, pluck my parents' strings like I used to, and they used to love to pluck mine as well. You know, I started to feel like, look at me, I'm really awesome. Right? Look at me, I'm not drinking vodka all day. I'm not crashing my car. I'm awesome. And I used to compare it to, I used to say, listen, if you live in a field of manure and all you do is smell shit all day, and then one day you walk out into the regular fresh air, you start thinking that air is from God. It's not. It's just that I've been living in the shit for so long that regular air seems heavenly. And that's kind of how early sobriety was. You know, anything that I did that wasn't basically breaking the law or breaking the rules of that I had in place, at least with my family, I started to feel like I was better. And it's very, very dangerous thinking. You know, next thing you know, you're like, listen, I'm doing really good. I don't need to go to meetings. And then all of a sudden, you're drinking again or doing whatever. This is kind of an interesting, you know, I had a conversation with a doctor. I had a client who's a doctor, and we were talking about ADHD, which is adult attention deficit disorder. What the fuck is it called? Adult attention deficit disorder, I think. Something like that. You know, my daughter, you know, if you have kids and, you know, your kids are wild and having fun and you're like, geez, you know, you need to focus. There's a lot of medication out there that they'd love to get these kids on, you know, to help them focus. We tried some medication for her to help get her focus, but she wasn't eating. It wasn't great. And so I said, you know what, let's not do this. Let's figure out, maybe we just need to be, you know, slow down our schedule, spend a little bit more time helping her, whatever it is, but let's not get her on this medication. And she's actually been doing fine. But the conversation was about adults. And I've always felt that, I didn't feel this when I was a kid, but looking back on it, I think I had that. I had a disorder in a deficit in my attention. I had trouble focusing. I had trouble, you know, showing up. And I probably had ADHD as a kid, just undiagnosed. Well, this lady's like, you know, and part of the reason I didn't really like my daughter taking this medication is because it's almost like methamphetamines. It's like an amphetamine. And when she would take it, her behavior reminded me of back in the day, doing speed, you know, very focused, you know, drawing small stuff, you know, very small projects, taking things apart, putting them back together. Just, yeah, you know, if there was some pretty cool things about doing speed like that is that you got a lot of shit done, right? You got your house clean, repaired your vacuum, took apart your bicycle. You know, there was just this unending amount of energy to do shit that, sober, I personally do not like doing, you know, cleaning the house, fixing stuff, you know, it's just, you know, you're like, okay, you know, I wish that there was something, you know, that we could take, which there isn't. You have to work through it. But in the conversation, she's like, oh yeah, there's a lot of adults that have, that take ADHD medicine. And I was like, really? And for a second, I was like, can I take meth and get away with it? You know, because I definitely struggle. And as I've gotten older and this pandemic and happiness has, you know, I'm very happy in my with my wife and my kids and my family. I'm very content, right? I don't need to, you know, prior to this, you know, I was doing a lot of running, still trying to get to running. I think part of the reason I haven't been running as much as the weather, but used to do a lot of running and just very busy. And then, you know, I met my wife and, you know, we're very content. We chill and, you know, cook dinner and stuff, watch TV, just kind of not always on the go. And part of me feels bad about that. I miss some of that. And then I've also been struggling a little bit with running. And I was talking to somebody the other day about, you know, at the height of my running, I was probably the saddest. It was probably the saddest point of my life. And just, you know, looking to improve myself physically, to appear better to others through exercise and running, and still being, you know, pretty sad inside, unfortunately. But, you know, today I'm very happy, very content. You know, my wife is, you know, she loves me regardless of how I look or, you know, I think, I don't know if I don't think I'd want to get any more unhealthy. You know, I'm not unhealthy, but I'm not, I could probably lose 10 pounds. And I'm not bad. I'm not really struggling with weight, but, you know, I'm not as lean and as thin as I was at one point. So, but it's tough for me to find the motivation to do a lot of the stuff that I was doing, running and just getting out, spending time outside. I will blame it on the weather. It's cold out. And once it starts warming up, I'll find the time and energy. My buddy and I, Brian, were supposed to run this morning. I'm like, Brian, let's run. I feel like a dumpling. And he's like, oh, my God, I put on 9 pounds over the weather. So we were committed to running this morning. I was into it. Actually, I wasn't into it, but I was committed because we had made the commitment. And he texts me this morning. He's like, I'm not going to be able to make it because they just had a new little boy and, you know, babies and feedings and all this stuff. So he's like, baby was up all night. I'm not going to be able to run. And inside part of me was like, yes, excellent. I got back in bed and slept more. And, but the point was, is that for a second, I started to consider whether I could possibly start doing some prescribed methamphetamines. This disease, you know, just when everything seems to be going smoothly, you know, I have no desire to drink, you know, I have no desire to do any drugs. All of a sudden you have this conversation and next thing you know, I start to contemplate whether basically legalized methamphetamine would work in my life. It won't. I know that. It will not. It never gives a break. You know, and the good thing is I talked to my wife about it, and she was just laughed. She's like, you're out of your mind. Let's read a Daily Reflections. I'm trying to get back into kind of getting into this habit of doing this podcast. And there's days I do it, and there's days that I'm not sure, you know, what your point is. But then I'll talk to people, and they're like, yeah, I've been listening to the podcast. I haven't heard it, or... So I talked to a friend yesterday who referenced this podcast, and I'm like, you know, there are people out there that listen to it, so I need to, you know, just do it and just talk about things that are going on in my life, and that's one of them, you know. I know I can't drink. I know I can't do drugs, but for some reason, my addiction will give me opportunities that look a little different than the way that they used to, and it ain't going to work. I know that. It isn't going to work. All right, so let's see. Daily Reflections. Today is February the 28th, just like I said. And it says, what? Question mark. No president? Question mark. When told that our society has no president having authority to govern it, no treasurer who can compel the payment of any dues, or our friends gasp and exclaim, this simply can't be. 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 132. When I finally made my way to AA, I cannot believe that there was no treasurer to compel the payment of dues. I could not imagine an organization that didn't require monetary contributions in return for a service. It was my first and thus far only experience with getting something for nothing. Because I do not feel used or conned by those in AA, I was able to approach the program free from bias and with an open mind. They wanted nothing from me. What could I lose? I thank God for the wisdom of the early founders who knew so well that alcoholics disdain from being manipulated. Yeah, it's a great point. I was sometimes I think, you know, I don't think we asked for anything. I think what most people used to you know, when the basket went around, we used to put a dollar. I personally feel like it should probably be two now. But no one's ever going to say that. And, of course, I always try to put in a little extra if I can. I know that some people can't put in any, which is totally awesome and fine. If I have a couple extra dollars. Like, I didn't go to a meeting basically all month. I mean, almost for a year, it felt like. And when I got back to that first meeting, I put $20 in the basket. I felt like I needed to catch up. But yeah, I don't really know. I don't really have any comment on that. I think it's interesting when you see people that work with other organizations and how the organizations start to struggle. You know, when you create a president or you create a treasurer, and there is concerns about money because, you know, that's where the root of all evil is, and you see. Things start to unravel when it comes to those things. And I've seen people that get very concerned about the money in AA. And I remember I had taken I was the treasurer for, actually, I was not the treasurer. I just happened to be the only person that could get a bank account. So I basically got the bank account for the meeting. And there was a guy that he was a bully. He was an AA bully. And he was not around, and the meeting was, him and his girlfriend had basically kind of ruined this meeting, you know, with wanting the money and la-da-da, and, you know, just kind of running this meeting with an iron fist, and everybody had left, and they were over it, and he had gone away, and we started to kind of build the meeting back up, and we got a new treasurer, and started putting money in an account. And then this guy showed back up, and I remember him calling me. He's like, I want that account. And I'm like, you're not getting that fucking account. You can go fuck yourself, asshole. But it was like this, you know, and you hear about it all the time. People steal from AA. A lot of the times they're like, well, I guess they needed it more than we did. But it is a real thing, and it will expose. And this guy, he had a lot of time. He had a lot of time, and he was an AA bully, and he wanted to control that money. And when you would ask him about it, he didn't really have a lot of answers. And he was probably just pocketing it and buying shit for himself with it. And I remember he said, I want that account. And I said, You're not getting it. All right, well, listen, I hope everybody has a great day. I don't know if you got anything out of that. I did. The only thing I was hoping was to push past the demons that are in my head that tells me you got nothing to say. Thanks for letting me share. Have a great day. Bye.